The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Puck drill down low. Controlled by Carlo. And the horn is going to sound. The Boston Bruins record a 4-1 victory over the Montreal Canadiens tonight, fueled by the hat trick from David Pastrnak. They have won 7 of 8, and they end the season series against the Canadiens, winning 3 of 4.
And welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. 617-779-0985, the number, of course, to take your phone calls throughout the next couple of hours as we work our way toward the Bruins and the Detroit Red Wings this afternoon at the Garden. Judd Sirott and Bob Beers will have the call of that, and they are joining us from the Garden this morning. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning, Ryan.
Interesting week as far as schedule-wise. I mean, the Bruins have played a lot of these back-to-backs. They'll have another back-to-back this weekend. But, you know, played on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday off. They play a game at home on Wednesday, then Thursday, Friday off. It's, you know, normally this time of year, you get into February and March, and the schedule is pretty heavy, and you're playing, you know, 3 and 4s, and you're playing every other day at bare minimum. So, you know, a couple of days in between games, a couple of times this week, a chance for this team to catch its breath a bit surrounding that Montreal game on Wednesday night.
It's almost, if you take out the Wednesday game against Montreal, it's almost like a college schedule that the Bruins have had here over the last couple of weeks. I had a chance to catch up with Chris Wagner, Anders Bjork. We were talking about it. Does this remind you of being back at Colgate or being back at Notre Dame? And they actually said they preferred Friday-Saturday versus Saturday-Sunday. but they talked about how much fun it was and what would it be like if all of a sudden you played that type of a schedule at the National Hockey League level. You're going to see different opponents here for the Bruins this weekend. It's going to be Detroit today and then the Rangers tomorrow. But what would it be like if it were back-to-back games against the same team? Just how much emotion would be in the building? And just to go back, just thinking about the end of that Montreal game, 4 games against the Canadiens, against your division, is just not enough during the regular season.
It's funny you bring that up, because one of the things that I, you know, had on the list of that I wanted to talk about is, you know, the rivalry with Montreal, and is you know, has it been diminished over the years? But that's part of it too, is that it just doesn't feel like you play these teams often enough, especially when, you know, so much is based around the divisions. When you get to the postseason and having to play out of your division, you know, the seeding in that division matters so much. 4 games against a divisional rival, it should be more.
Well, it's not changing anytime soon. I don't see that changing anytime soon, especially when you add another team into the league with Seattle coming in. But, you know, last week, just go back to last week, and you talk about the back-to-back. It was more than that. It was, you know, some travel involved. And, you know, you see kind of let, and the Bruins had won 6 in a row prior to that game against the Red Wings last week. And you know, they weren't happy about the outcome, but they've lost to Detroit twice this season, and they got the Red Wings again here today. But they've had now a couple of days to rest and relax and get ready for it. So hopefully ready to go when the puck drops this afternoon against this Red Wings team that they haven't beaten yet this year.
Yeah, what is it about?
And I don't know.
We'll talk. I mean, we'll talk more about them obviously a little later on. But you know, that game last week. Look, it's the second half of a back to back. You, as you mentioned, you had to travel. It was a, you know, late afternoon game last Saturday.
It was a
Saturday,
busy week too, Ryan. It wasn't just the back to back. You know, it was a busy week as well. And they had played some good hockey, right? You know, you're up to Minnesota and Winnipeg, and you win those. You won whatever it was, 5 in a row coming out of the break, whatever. You know, so, you know, they did what they needed to, and then you go against Detroit, and you're just not as sharp as you needed to be. And, you know, Bruce Cassidy talked about that last week when we interviewed him, and, you know, even in his press conferences just said, look, you know, it's not an excuse, it's just reality. It's just we weren't sharp, and we're a little beat up and a little run down, and it showed. And, you know, even though they felt that they were still the better team in that game, Jonathan Bernier played very well in net for them, but he's beaten the Bruins twice this year. So, you know, they're going to have to try to find a way to solve him here this afternoon.
In addition to that, Ryan, I think Torrey Krug had mentioned after the first meeting and heading into the second that maybe the Bruins didn't respect the game the way that they should have. Now, in that second meeting, which just recently took place, as Bob alluded to, the execution was just a little bit off, and Jonathan Bernier was fabulous. And the coaching staff mentioned yesterday that they were going to remind the players of what's happened recently, not just here in the first two meetings against Detroit, but what happened last year. So the Red Wings have reeled off five consecutive wins against the Bruins. The Bruins are supposed to be reminded of that today, and we'll see if that manifests itself in this afternoon's matchup.
Well, it's kind of a cliche, and you know, you hear it all the time that you can't take anybody lightly in the NHL, and look, we see that last weekend. If the, you know, not that the Bruins, you know, took that game lightly, but if you're not at the top of your game, you can lose to anybody, even a team that, you know, struggles as much in the standings as Detroit. They do have talent. They do have guys that can, you know, can put the puck in the net and make plays. And as you mentioned, you know, their goaltender sent for some reason seems to get your number.
They do. I think physically the Bruins were there. They showed up. But as we've kind of touched on, the Bruins were not able to execute the way they're normally accustomed to executing. And one of the things that has really stood out here in the matchups both this year and last year is the way some of the top guys for Detroit have played. Not just Jonathan Bernier, but Tyler Bertuzzi again has been a thorn in the season series against the Bruins. And now you've got Detroit's top line that is all the way back. Anthony Mantha did not play last weekend. He is back in the lineup for the Red Wings. And that line, along with Bertuzzi, Mantha, and Dylan Larkin, they've given the Bruins some fits.
Let's talk a little bit about that game against Montreal the other night. What did you guys see that you liked? I mean, the Bruins, obviously, you know, coming off of a couple of days, as we talked about, come out, beat Montreal 4-1. What did you think of the game overall, and what really stood out to you from the Bruins' perspective?
No, I liked it. I mean, I think they like a lot of what they're doing here recently. You know, heading into the break, that game against Vegas, and even, you know, a couple games against Pittsburgh. I know they let one slip away in Pittsburgh, but, you know, they like the way that they are competing and playing, winning battles, harder to play against, stingy defensively. You know, that's got to be their identity, and they feel that it is. They feel that they've gotten back to it. You know, they've been a harder team to play against in that regard. They've gotten the goaltending. You know, Tuukka Rask has played, three straight, I think, here. So we'll see what they do this weekend. I don't know if it's been announced yet or not, but it was
Rask today and Halak tomorrow.
So, you know, Tuukka, you know, Rask has been excellent, as he has through most of the season. So, you know, I feel that they've gotten back to the way that they want to play in order to be successful, and closer to the way that they need to play in order to be successful in the postseason. You know, they're number one in the league in team defense right now and goals against per game. That has to be their identity, and then the goals will come. And, you know, Pastrnak the other day was, you know, fantastic. Marchand was great. You know, Bergeron made how many plays, you know, coming back defensively in that third period to make sure that they lock it down. And that's another area as well, right? That was there was a portion of the season where they were struggling to lock games down. They seem to have gotten over that hurdle as well.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, Marchand. There's been some joking about him trying to find his hands. I mean, that setup of the first Pastrnak goal the other night, those hands are, they have been found. There's no doubt about that.
I was waiting for Torrey Krug. We kind of put it on a tee for him there in the first intermission. How pretty was that play that Brad Marchand made? And I was waiting for him to go there. Maybe because
he's too serious in game.
He's too serious in game.
You get him after the game or whatever, he'd go there.
Then he'd decide to carve him up. But Marchand's been terrific. He's got 71 points. He's seventh in the league in that category, tied for fifth in the league in assists. You know, he is potentially on pace to come close to what he was able to do last year, or maybe match or exceed it when he registered 100 points. And David Pastrnak, it should be pointed out, I know that everybody is talking about the 40 goals, and he's the first since Glenn Murray to do it since, 02-03, and that's a new career high for him. He's only 9 points away from the scoring lead in the National Hockey League. The 81 points that he has right now has matched his career high from last year. He has a chance to be the first Bruin to lead the league in scoring since Bobby Orr.
That's not bad company. I mean, it's unbelievable. And you know, four hat tricks in a season and all of that. I mean, he's 58 games in, 41 goals and 81 points in 58 games. It's unbelievable. As you mentioned, tying this career high in points, he's already set his career high in goals. We'll talk a lot more about him as the show goes on today. We'll get to your calls coming up as well. 617-779-0985 as we get started on this week's edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub, Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Judd Zerot and Bob Beers joining us over at TD Garden this morning as the Bruins will take on the Detroit Red Wings this afternoon. 12:30 pregame, 1 o'clock faceoff here on the Sports Hub. We're here to take your calls up until 11 o'clock today at 617-779-0985. I mentioned it briefly earlier, guys. I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on it because you guys are in the building and it oftentimes is a different feeling. And maybe it was just the crowd mics the other night, but the Bruins and Montreal rivalry, we all know, what it is. We all know what it has been over the years. Does it still feel that same juice when these two teams get together, especially since Montreal has been kind of at the bottom of the rankings here in the last couple of years? They haven't really been relevant in the division. Has it lost some of its luster, or are these games still feel as intense? Do the crowd still feel as intense as they did back a few years ago?
No, I mean, it doesn't, because Montreal is still, they've been out of the playoffs. They've been struggling. It's not the same. It's definitely not the same. You played Toronto the last two seasons or in the playoffs. That's a little bit more right now than the Montreal Canadiens are. I mean, I think personally, and you look around, I think Tampa Bay's even more so right now. You're battling with them. I mean, and you played them in the playoffs recently. You haven't played Montreal in a while. Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't feel it's the same. So, I've been kind of laughing at some of the lines of questioning with the rivalry and everything else over the last week, leading up to that game, because it's not the same. It's not the same. And I'll take it back to, when late 80s and early 90s, when, you saw the Canadians all the time, and it was, you had to go through them, and, they had a little stranglehold on the Bruins, and then you broke through, I think it was in 88. All of a sudden now you got past that point, and now you start beating them, but you're facing them every year, it seemed like. Mm-hmm. So, much different now.
And let's transfer that. So
yeah, take it into the early 2000s, and you played them several times in the playoffs. Sorry, Judd, you played them several times in the playoffs. Yeah, that's when it was really at its peak, and or at least, there, relevant, but it hasn't been recently.
You're going to have two original six matchups this weekend, and both of these teams are, again, forecast to miss the playoffs. And these two teams obviously have a longstanding history, but the rivalry isn't what it is because of where your opponents are heading into the games.
Well, and that, to the flip side of that, one of the things, we mentioned earlier, the way the playoff format is set up, that was part of the idea, right, was to help stoke those rivalries. And, Bob, as you mentioned, you play Toronto, back each year now, and it feels like that has become your chief rivalry at this point, is that, the Maple Leafs, especially from their end, I'm sure, because they keep getting dumped out of the playoffs by the Bruins. So, that feels like a bigger matchup. And if you get into this thing with Tampa, maybe that becomes a bigger rivalry. But that's, the playoffs are where these things are forged, and that's what the NHL was hoping to do. It just feels like they could do a little bit more in the regular season to help that out too.
Well, I think when the league made some of the changes to the schedule, and I don't agree with it, I miss the conference format personally, that there was more than just stoking the rivalries to try and get out of your division. There were travel costs involved. There were some other factors that they wanted to concern themselves with. But I think if they want to get the best out of the product, I would reexamine the way that you have your schedule.
Let's go to Maria in Watertown to get us started this morning. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just really quickly, I wanted to touch on the on Jay Bomeister's health scare. Glad to hear that things turned out a lot better than they could have. And kudos to the staff that responded quickly and to the NHL for recognizing the severity of the situation and postponing that game. So all the best to Jay and his family for a speedy recovery. This is a message for Leafs fans and Habs fans. You folks need to get over your inferiority complex, okay? Zdeno Chara got fined. He deserved to be fined. He is in control of his stick, but it always comes back around to that fan base's inferiority complex when it comes to anything related to the Bruins. And then the other thing I wanted to touch base on was the trade deadline and an article that I read earlier this week where the writer was imploring Don Sweeney to go all in and give this core group another kick at the can. And I would like to see him do that. I would like to see at least one GM in this town have a pair of cojones and go for it and give the team the best opportunity to win. And if that means making some hard decisions to get back to a Stanley Cup final, I don't think you're going to get a lot of backlash from core fans to give, you know, Bergeron and Chara and Rask one more opportunity at a minimum to redeem themselves. As always, thanks for the time. Have a great day, guys.
All right. Appreciate the call, Maria. And look, we'll talk obviously more about the deadline as Ty Anderson joins us here coming up in a few minutes. But, you know, she used the term all in, guys, and I'm not sure, you know, exactly what that means, whether it's, you know, going out and mortgaging the future for, you know, for to get yourself together for one run here or what. But look, I think we all agree the Bruins are very much in the conversation to go deep in the playoffs, very much in the conversation to contend for a Stanley Cup. You know, I think there is a lot of pressure on Don Sweeney to make that move or two that maybe can push them over the hump. And I expect that something's going to happen here over the next, you know, what is it, 8 or 9 days before the trade deadline gets here. I don't know if I would consider it going all in, but I think everybody understands where this team is right now and what they have in front of them. And, you know, that extra little piece might be the difference between getting the cup this year and not.
Well, a lot of factors, though. I mean, it's not as simple as, hey, let's just go get this guy. There's so many factors to go along with it. I mean, you know, the salary cap is playing a big role in this thing. You're up against it right now. You've got to be very creative in order to make some space, in order to loosen it up, to be able to bring somebody in. That's just task number one, right? I mean, of several. I mean, you got a lot of teams that are still in it. You got a lot of teams that are going to be competing against you to bring somebody in. You know, it's not as simple as snap your fingers and make a trade. Do I want it to happen? Yeah, I'd like to see an improvement in a couple of areas on this team. But at the same time, you know, it's not just as simple as that. It's they sent down Lauzon and Kuhlman this week just to save a couple of days,
right?
You know, because they had a light week and they could send and then, you know, call them right back up for the games. You know, they're trying to manage their cap. They're trying to maximize what they have. I mean, they've got to be creative in order to find some money if they're going to even think about bringing somebody in.
And even if you get some big name, let's take Taylor Hall, for example. let's take Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
So everybody thought Arizona makes the trade. They're going to take off. They're going to be a force in the Pacific Division. They're going to win it. They have a chance to make a run in the playoffs for the first time in a while. They're going to be lucky if they make the playoffs at this point. And it's still to be determined whether or not Taylor Hall will be with the team after the trade deadline on February 24th. So it's not just as easy. And Bob touched on it beautifully, how hard it is to be able to acquire pieces, what it's going to take to be able to do that, the competition that you're going through. But just because you get that piece doesn't mean that it'll all of a sudden transform your teams. So the Bruins have to be able to not only pick up the piece that they need, but hopefully that's a piece that makes your team better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I hope if people understand. I don't know if they do. How how tight this is really going to be. And you know, we talk all the time about how they want to make a deal without moving something off of the NHL roster. And we've talked about this over the past few weeks. That's pretty much impossible at this point, right? They're going to have to find a way to clear some space to bring in anybody of consequence. And that's so there's going to need to be some decisions to be made here. To that end, we talked a little bit last week. I think Ty, you know, had mentioned it, that Jeremy Lauzon has been up and, you know, he's been playing and were they showcasing him for a potential trade? Were they showcasing him for themselves so that they could think about moving somebody else? Yesterday, Lauzon gets a 2-year contract extension at short money. It's $850,000 per. What do you think of the deal? The fact that it looks like, you know, they're, you know, going to stick with him, and we'll maybe talk a little bit about it later on in the hour about what the top six D is going to look like as Connor Clifton starts to get back into the lineup here as well. But what did you guys think of the announcement yesterday of Lauzon getting an extra couple of years?
Excellent. I mean, yeah. You know, he's earned it. I think, you know, one part of the reason he's playing here, okay, can this guy play in the NHL? Can he play on a regular basis in the NHL? And can he be of service to us as, you know, we'll call him the sixth defenseman, right? Playing his offside. You know, they wanted to, I think that was part of the reason you wanted to see what this guy could do. And, you know, on a regular basis, they saw some of it last year and he acquitted himself well when they had all those injuries. So yeah, less than $1 million, 2-year deal. You know, he's a second round pick that continues to develop. And I think that they like what they've seen from him. I think they like him as a person. I think they like his character, how hard he competes, and, you know, what he brings to the table. So more competition for jobs as Clifton gets healthier and ready to play.
All right, we got Judd and Bob over at the Garden. Ty Anderson will join us coming up next as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. And your calls welcome, of course, at 617-779-0985.
Black and gold freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 the Sports Hub. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. We've got Judd and Bob over at TD Garden this morning. And now joining me here in Dorchester as well is Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just before the break, we were talking about Jeremy Lauzon's contract extension. I think last week when you were on, we talked a little bit about the fact that maybe the Bruins were showcasing him for a potential trade. He gets a 2-year extension. Did they see enough from him that they might be open to instead trading someone else off of that back line and keeping Lauzon here? Is that what that extension is about?
Whether it's now or later, I think you'd have to believe that's the case, right? You're looking at this D moving forward. I mean, he's a great insurance policy to have back there for $850,000 for the next 2 years. I mean, that's how you remain competitive in today's game, and that's how you give yourself options moving forward. I said it last night, and I wrote it for the website. I mean, you think about this defense now moving forward. At the very worst, right, next year, you have Lauzon and Clifton for a combined $1.85 million. I mean, that allows you to, you know, look at your options in-house with Torrey Krug's contract. Matt Grizzlick's going to get a raise. Chara, if he comes back next year, it's another kind of low contract. That gives you the options to A, you're closer to signing all those guys if you make a move on, say, John Moore. Or B, that allows you to probably upgrade the position outside the roster, too, if you find that necessary as well. So I like this contract a lot because I think it gives you a lot of options moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think John Moore's been fine, but he's under contract for $2.75 million. If, you know, in a cap-tight team, you can replace that for under $1 million in Lauzon. I mean, you kind of have to do that with where your team is at right now.
Yeah, and the thing with Lauzon is he's lined up on the right side a little bit, so do they look at him as more of a right side option or a left? But the fact is he can play both for your team, and John Moore, it seems like he's played the left for the most part, and they like him there. But if this team is fully healthy, John Moore is probably your number four defenseman on the left side. So I just think that, to your point exactly, just you have a greater option now in terms of that, especially with the cap savings that you would have on that. And you guys were talking about it earlier in the show, is that if you're making a trade, money has to go out. So now does that money, do you look at Moore's 2.75 and go, okay, that's the money that's going to go out?
Well, you looked at that this week as far as what the Bruins, we've talked, you know, week after week about who the Bruins might target, and we've heard all the names that are out there. What we haven't talked that much about is what the Bruins might be willing to offer, right? What they might be willing to give up. You did a piece on that this week. If you're Don Sweeney, ideally, if you're going out, whether it's, you know, Anderson or whether it's Toffoli or whether, we've gone down the list of names, what ideally are you looking to give up to improve this team?
Well, if you look at the NHL roster and the guys you can move around there off that, I mean, you land on the suspects we've talked about before, the usual suspects. Heinen has $2.8 million, Moore is $2.75 million. And then you go beyond that, you have sort of the tweeners, right? Your guys that have done the Providence shuffle a few times this year. I think that makes the most sense. And again, this cap structure, this team setup is really unique because it changes every day. You know, you look at their daily cap and sort of their deadline space. Bob was talking about they have to move guys down, you know, just to kind of create some pennies here and there. I mean, that is a very much day-to-day picture. So you have to look at it every day and say, okay, well, if you move, you know, maybe like they had a week ago, they could have acquired Tyler Toffoli without trading anything off their NHL roster. I don't know if that's still the case anymore because of everything else that's happened. It really is a day-to-day kind of picture for this team. But if you have to move money out, you have to land on, I think, on... And I'm talking significant money. I'm not talking entry-level money. I think you're landing on a Heinen or a Moore just because of where their fit is on this team if this team is fully healthy right now. And, you know, if this team is adding up front like we expect, you have two spots between Kuhlman, Bjork, and Heinen. Heinen makes 2.8. The other guys are on entry-level deals. So you do the math there, and if Heinen's playing on his off wing, are they better off, you know, with the deadline acquisition? So it's just they have a lot of questions that they have to answer between now and, you know, 9 days from now. It's not an easy equation for them.
Do you think they're going to be able to move the Backes money?
If there's ever a time to do it in a trade, it's now, because they could eat half of it and they're still saving money if they do that, because it's better than a buyout and it's better than burying him in the minors, because that saves you at least $1 million. If you can trade him and eat half the money like you did with Matt Beleski, that's only $3 million this year and next year on your cap. Whereas you buy him out, next year it's $4 million in dead money. You bury him, it's about $5.995 or something like that in dead money. So that is the best way. They will free up the most money if they're able to do it that way. Obviously, you don't want to give up, you don't want to eat any of the money, but I don't think that's realistic with this guy. You want to get rid of this contract to create the savings now and in the future, and eating half of it is probably the best way to do it. If you're going to do it via trade,
is it worth? And I'll, you know, to you and Judd and Bob as well, if you want to get in on this, is it worth? You know, we've seen teams in the past, you know, a first round draft pick to get somebody to take a contract off of their hands. Is it worth that much to this team to be able to do that right now?
Well, I saw it with Marleau, right?
Yeah.
But Toronto had to do that. They absolutely had to do that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to sign Marner. So Boston is not in that situation. I mean, they're not in an ideal situation, but so I don't know I don't think that they're going that far. Now, it depends on the player you're getting back. It depends on the whole deal. I mean, you know, first rounders, you know, I think everything is in play, but it's all based on what you're getting back.
Well, it could also give you the, you know, if you're looking toward this offseason, I mean, you've got the, you know, decision to be made on Torrey Krug too. And there's obviously, you know, other players that need raises as well. You know, if you get that money, you know, $3 million off of your books for next year, that can help with a number of different ways. It's not just about improving the team immediately. It's about improving the team potentially over the long term too.
Well, I think if you're the Bruins, there are some teams. Listen, if you're going to incent another team to be able to pick up the Backes contract and throw in a first-round pick, there are some teams that have the ability I don't know if the Bruins are necessarily in this spot, but there are some teams that can make another transaction to get that first-round pick back. A team like the Winnipeg Jets comes to mind. They made a deal last year with the Rangers to pick up Kevin Hayes. They had to throw a first-round pick in there. They ultimately got that pick back. And I've seen a number of teams be able to do this. But the other factors, how good is the draft? Where do you think you're going to be picking? So you've got a couple of things at play. And to go back to Ty's point, I think anytime you're trying to trade a contract like Backes, you probably have a better chance of doing it in the off season when you have all 31 teams the other 30 teams that are involved rather than the teams that are just in it trying to make deals, because those teams will have a more clarity on what their salary and what their roster situation looks like.
Yeah, I think for me, I circle back to the Rick Nash deal, right? Like, if you're getting that guy, can you try to staple that contract to it? Like you did with Bielski. I think that's the because you're already giving up a first-round pick there, like for the mm-hmm. for the asset. So it's almost like, okay, well, you can almost lessen the blow by throwing that, you know, that contract in with that first round pick and the prospects you're trading, because you're saying, well, it's just part of the package. You know, it's almost easier to sell to yourself that way, I find, than the other way. The Rick Nash deal, I mean, didn't work out for the Bruins, but they did get out of that Bielski contract, or as much as they could anyway. So I wonder if that's an option for this team too when they do make a trade. Is you get Kreider, you get Anderson, you get whoever you get, but as part of the pick you're giving up, you're also throwing in that contract with 50% retained.
It's more, if it makes it more palatable, you know, all the way around, then, you know, perhaps it works out that way. But, you know, again, that if you're, I think you've mentioned this in the past, that it's, you have to do what you have to do to get rid of that contract, whether it's now or whether it's the off season, because there's not going to be any getting out of it. Most of that money once you get past this offseason, right? It's just, you're either going to have to eat it all or you're going to have to eat some of it, but you're going to have to try and maximize your space as best you can. And the only way to do that is to get somebody else to take it.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's easier now, because he talked about this, or the rumor was that Backes wants to make it work in Boston, but he wants to be in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So if he doesn't get the opportunity here, he wants it elsewhere. So, and he has a modified no trade. I think it's 8 teams that he could go to still. So now I wonder if he waives it because he's sick of sitting at home and not doing anything. He's a prideful guy. He wants to play. Maybe he goes to a non-contender. Maybe he waives it because he wants to play and he's sick of sitting at home and collecting checks. As fun as that may be, that's not David Backes. David Backes wants to play. He wants to contribute, and maybe now that makes it easier, whereas in the summertime, maybe he wasn't willing to go to an LA Kings or New York Rangers or whatever trade may have presented itself for the Bruins.
617-779-0985, of course, is the number. We got Ty Anderson with us in studio. Judd and Bob over at TD Garden. We'll continue on this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up.
Shoots and rest, flashed up the glove.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. And streaming on the Sports Hub app.
.5, the Sports Hub. Brian Johnston. Here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, joined by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Judd Surratt and Bob Beers are with us as well over at TD Garden as they get set for Bruins and the Red Wings this afternoon. Talking, Ty, about, you know, who the Bruins might need and or want to or be willing, I shouldn't say want to, but be willing to part with as we approach the trade deadline a week from Monday. Some of the prospects that we've either seen a little bit of or have, you know, we've heard tale of, you know, those are guys that oftentimes end up being parts of these deals at the trade deadline. Prospects and draft picks and guys that are still playing in juniors or guys that are still playing in the minors. You put some of these guys into your column this week. Guys like, and I'll just run down the list: Solaric, Frederick, Senishin, Oscar Steen, Studnika, Vakanainen, Zboril. Which one of those guys, like if you had to pick one of those guys and said, I don't think the Bruins would really want to deal this guy. I think that's the guy that the Bruins would want to hang on to. Which of those guys would it be?
Oh, it's Studnika. It's Studnika, and I think that they like him a lot. I mean, they were even talking about giving him a look, you know, before the deadline to see if he could play in the NHL before the Coyle-Bjork chemistry kind of came along. I feel that kind of quieted that idea. But he's the guy that you don't want to move. Some of these guys, you'd almost, in the case of Solaric, he'd be a throw-in, and he's not going to get you a ton anymore. That would be an organization saying, yeah, can you throw him in so we can see what he has, you know, before his contract's up and see if he can play in our system. But yes, Danica is the guy that I don't see them trading. I just threw it in there because I think that if they do swing for the fences, if you're an opposing GM, you'd be stupid not to ask about it and see, well, can we maybe get this guy? You know, everyone comes into discussion wanting the moon. Whether or not they get it, it remains to be seen. But you go back to the Rangers back in 2018 when they were talking with the Bruins. I'm pretty sure they're asking about DeBrusque and Carlo, you know, because they were young and they were in their first and second years as full-timers at that point. So they were saying, well, are these guys available? And so,
I mean, I feel like that was the rumor a lot, that Carlo was involved in a lot of rumors early on, that teams, you know, were interested in him. And as it turns out, they should have been because he's a damn good NHL defenseman. And they, you know, he was a pretty good prospect at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's due diligence, right? That's trying to find the next guy, you know, on your NHL roster before the team realizes that they have something special there. So, yeah, Stanika is a no-go, I think, in almost every discussion that they're going to have. Beyond that, I do wonder, though, with what they have in Providence, I don't think they want to give up on Frederick right now either. You look at his numbers, he's 21 points in his last 30 AHL games. I think it's something like that. And he's developing a little bit of some snarl in his game as well. They probably like that for the long term as well. So you want to see you translate, of course. I haven't seen enough of him down in Providence to say, oh, you can't move him now. But that's another guy that they're probably going to give some pause on because of his development, especially in recent months.
Would any of you guys balk at a guy like Vakanainen? If, you know, a team's looking to, you know, add a defensive prospect. I mean, we've seen him a very little bit at the NHL level. You know, he looks like he's got some talent to his game, but, you know, you're going to have to give something to get something. Would a guy like Vakanainen make you have pause on a trade? And I know it's difficult to say because you don't know what what it is that you're trying to get, but, you know, have we seen enough from him? Do you think the organization has seen enough from him to think that this is a guy that they can commit to be a top six guy in their organization here in the next couple of years?
I mean, I honestly can't answer that. I haven't seen Providence play. Haven't seen Vakanainen play in Providence, so I don't know where his development is exactly. The only taste I've had of him is up here, you know, and playing for the Bruins. And, you know, at times he's looked very good up here. And, you know, other times, you know, not as much. But it's a small sample, very small sample sure. size. So, you know, kind of hard to get a gauge on exactly where he's at. I don't see them giving up on a first-round draft pick from just a couple of years ago, you know, without some more development. So I would doubt that. I would highly doubt that. Say it this way. Everybody's available, right? I mean, at the right price. So
there's usually not, yeah. You know, you can say anybody's untradeable, but for the right deal, everybody's tradable.
So,
right?
I mean, it's for him, you know, they would be able to answer that much better than I would, you know, because they watch him on a daily basis down in Providence.
Thoughts on Vakanainen?
I don't want to trade him either. And that's sort of the struggle you have here, right? Is the deadline is often, we'll give you, you know, 50 cents, you give us a dollar. And so that's the hard part for a lot of these trades is that I find myself going, well, no, I don't want to give up that guy either. I'm with you, Bob. I want to see more of Vakanainen before I can tell you, okay, well, this is a ceiling and you need to do this because he's going to be this player. I don't know yet.
He got drafted, right? I mean, he's going to come over. He's going to play in North America. He's going to play in the North America rink. Very young guy coming from a foreign country. I mean, you got to get him into some, you know, situations. He's got to learn how to play, you know, 80 games a year. And then he had a couple of injuries that he's had to go through. So it's more than just, okay, put on the skates and start playing. You know, you're getting, you're adapting to a whole new life, a whole new lifestyle, you know, right? Not only turning pro, but turning pro in a different country. So there's a lot that goes along with it and a lot of development that goes along with it. And like I said, I mean, you'd have to see a lot more of them before you could formulate an opinion, but I don't see them giving up on a first-round pick unless it's just really going the other way and in a hurry. So he's only been around for a couple of years now. And these guys, they need some time to develop, especially defensemen. But I think all guys, you know, they need time to develop. And then it gets to the point where, okay, can this guy play in the NHL or is he destined to be, you know, an American Hockey League player?
One more guy I want to ask you about at the NHL level. You talked about Danton Heinen and, you know, how the math kind of goes on that he, because of his contract, might be one of the more logical ones to move. But you also had Anders Bjork on your list, which, look, he kind of an incomplete sample here over the last couple of years, and we've started to see what this organization hoped to see out of him. Do you feel like he would have, you know, significant value in the trade market, and would the team be willing to let him go at this point now that we're starting to see the development that they've been waiting for?
That's exact. That last part is why I don't think he gets moved. And I just think that if you're a team, though, if you're a GM and the Bruins are trying to get your best player, you're going to ask about him because he looks good. And for me, I don't think the Bruins move him because they've waited so long for this, right? 2 years, back-to-back shoulder injuries that ended his season. They've waited for this player to show up. And when you watch him with Coyle, that chemistry has been fantastic, and that could be a game breaker in the playoffs. I really do think that could be a massive 1-2 for them on their third line, drawing the favorable matchups. I don't want to move him at all, but that's another player that I included on that because I think that if you're a GM, an opposing GM, and you don't ask about him, you're not doing your job. So I watching him these last few weeks, these last few months, you see how he's getting worked into the power play and in the penalty kill here and there. That's a sign that he's going to be a keeper, in my opinion, so I don't want to do that either.
I'll probably end up asking you about this next weekend too, but do you think that we see a Marcus Johansson kind of move, you know, this year, or do we, as Maria from Watertown said, do we get a swing for the fences, we're going all in for a cup this year kind of move?
Well, what do you consider Tyler Toffoli? Is he a Johansson or is he a swing for the fences?
It's not that doesn't feel swing for the fences.
It might be their best fit, though. Economically speaking, you know, the price you'd pay.
Do the economics allow for a swing for the fences move?
Yes and no. It all depends what you're moving out. I think that's what we've talked about now. What are they giving up here? If you move the Backus contract, you can add that player. But if you don't do that and you have to focus on picks and prospects, it becomes a little bit harder. But I think I'm sticking to my guns here. I think that Toffoli is the one that makes the most sense for them, price-wise and fit-wise, right shot, right wing. Josh Anderson, I don't know if he's truly available. The Blue Jackets are listening, but that doesn't mean that he's going to get traded. And the other part of it, too, is that, you know, one goal in 24, 26 games, he's been hurt this year. So what version are you getting?
He's still not even playing.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're paying for the 30-goal scorer, well, I want to know he's healthy before you give up that haul, and I want to know that his contract ask isn't, you know, $6.5 million per year. That's been a point of contention, it seems, with the Blue Jackets. They haven't been able to work out a new contract, and so I want to know which version you're getting there. So I just think looking at the market, looking at what's out there, I just think that Toffoli makes the most sense for them.
You can read Ty Anderson and get his views on all of this at 98.5thesportshub.com. Appreciate the time as always.
Anytime. It's weird not seeing Bob and Judd.
just faceless voices floating around in your head.
It's like voices in the sky. It's fun. I don't know. It's unusual. I'll see you guys in a couple of hours.
Sounds good.
All right. Yep. Judd and Bob will stick around with us for another hour. We'll get to your calls right off the top of the next hour here at 617-779-0985 right after Sports Hub headlines.
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.5 the Sports Hub. Our second hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show for this week here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. I'm Ryan Johnston over at TD Garden. We've got Judd Surratt and Bob Beers getting ready to call that Bruins Red Wings game. And your calls, of course, at 617-779-0985. Let's get to some of those here right off the top of the hour. Dan in Newburyport, thanks for holding. You're next on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Yeah, hey guys, good morning. Great great beanpot calls, Ryan and Bob.
Thank you, thanks.
So, to me, the Bruins trade deadline needs to accomplish four things. One, they've got to meet their roster needs for this year to make a legit cup run. They've got to solve their longer-term top six winger issue. They've got to keep Stanika, Lozon, and Lauko. And then lastly, obviously, they got to stay within the cap. But not just now, they need to stay within the cap when Kevin Miller comes back. And ultimately, I think, as I've thought about this, Athanasiou and Brendan Dillon, that combo is the right answer. And here's why. One, in terms of meeting their roster needs, the Charlie Coyle and Bjork combo has really made their middle six like a 2A and 2B versus line 2 and 3. So if you slot Athanasiou on the left with Coyle and Bjork, now teams really need to choose, you know, who are they going to match up against the Krejci and DeBrusk line? And it's going to create a mismatch one way or the other, and I really love that. And then Brendan Dillon is sort of your replacement now for Kevin Miller. And then if Kevin Miller comes back, you know, that's just gravy. He's depth defenseman. You're not going to be able to count on him for, you know, 20 minutes a game. So you can slot him in game here and there. Long-term wing issue, happen to see you as an RFA, obviously. As long as you can sign him to an extension for less than $5 million, I think he's a great option. And then to keep Stanika, Lozon, and Lauko, you know, obviously those two players, Athanasiou and Dillon, will require a lot. But if you can give up Heinen Moore, and then I would be willing to give up to a first-round pick 1 year, a second-round pick another year, and then any two combination of Vakanainen, Frederik Zaboral, Zanishin, add other asset. And then just the last thing here before I turn it over to you guys, to meet that cap when Kevin Miller comes back, if you trade Heinen Moore and half of Backes' contract, those two players coming in with $6.3 million, you're just under the cap, $100K under the cap with Kevin Miller coming back, so you can make it work. So can you guys talk a little bit more about both of those two players, their game, their character, and what you think of a potential fit on this roster?
All right. Thanks, Dan. Wow. Okay. There's a lot to unpack there. He did a lot of math for us.
A lot of thought. Yeah,
he did. And you know what? It was well thought out. So I'll turn it over to you guys. Athanasiou and Dillon were the two guys that, you know, that he would like to see the Bruins target. Do you have a preference there? Do you think those guys would be good fits? Do you think they're available? What do we think
of those
two? Can I
start on the Bjork coil?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Thing?
Yeah.
I'm not as high on it as some of the other people, including, you know, I know we didn't have time to really discuss it with Ty, but I still need to see more from Anders Bjork. I mean, I think it's in there. I think he's got a tremendous amount of ability. And I think that's why they're giving him a really good look right now, because he's had his first two seasons cut short because of injury. And we've seen good things from him, but I think I want to see more from him.
So you think the organization is trying to decide what he is, right? I mean,
they want to, like, this is his first full season. So I think they, you know, I think he's an NHL player. Don't get me wrong. They want him to play and play a lot and, you know, get the reps. I think that's the kind of the direction they're going. By the way, they moved him back over to left wing, right? So, you know, the right side wasn't, they weren't crazy about him over on that right side. I mean, he'll end up over there at times during games, but, you know, they did move him back over to the left wing and move Heinen over to the right side. So if you want to get into Athanasiou and Dillon just as players, I mean, Athanasiou, tremendous amount of speed. He's got the ability to score. He's not having a great year. You know, the minus 42 in 42 games, leading the league in that category.
And he has only 8 goals after he had 30 last year.
So, you know, what kind of player is he? What player is he? Is it just a product of, you know, a difficult situation in Detroit and a rough year in Detroit? Or is it, you know, what kind of player is he exactly? Still pretty young, obviously, but speed and skill, you know, speed and skill and ability. And Brendan Dillon competes extremely hard. Left shot. See, he's going to play the left side. He's not a righty, and he's not going to play that right side. So, you know, if you bring him in, it's for depth, right? I mean, if that's the direction you're going, if nobody's moving out, I'm saying, you know, is he a better option than, say, Matt Grizzlick on that left side? you know, because I don't think Krug and Char are coming out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. So is he a better option than Grizzlick? I'm not so sure. You know, different, very, very different players. But he competes. He's big. He's physical. You know, not afraid to throw his weight around. And, you know, I've heard good things about character. I don't know him personally.
The other thing that Dan, the caller, brought up, when because he was focused on the cap situation for the Bruins, not only do you have to sign Jake DeBrusk, Anders Bjork is an RFA. I think at this point that should be a manageable number. But then you have to make a decision on your backup goaltender. Yaroslav Halak is up.
Yeah, and look, that's we know we've talked in the past about how important he has been to the success of this team, and allowing Tuukka Rask to play a manageable number of games, that's going to be even more important going forward. You're going to he's 34.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are going to be a lot of goaltenders that are out there. That is one thing that'll work in the Bruins' favor, that the market's going to be flooded with a lot of unrestricted free agents. So there could potentially be a lot of goaltender movement, and you could have some options there. But clearly, this is a tandem that has worked.
Going back to Athanasiou and Dylan, just by the way, Dylan is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, makes 3.27 if you're trying to do the math on that. Athanasiou is making $3 million. He's still a restricted free agent at the end of the year. So that, you know, if you're potentially looking to make a move for either one of those guys, that obviously enters into what you'd have to give up. Would the Red Wings be willing to cut ties with Athanasiou, knowing that they still have him under control at the end of the year, as opposed to him being an unrestricted free agent? And what's it going to cost to get a deal done if you wanted to keep him around in the longer term? Sean is in Quincy. You're next here on the 98.5 Sports Hub Hockey Show. What's going on?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I just wanted your guys' thoughts on Miles Wood. Pretty physical player, not afraid to throw his body around, which, you know, see what the Bruins could need. 24 years old. I know he's not talked about as much as a Palmieri, but I think he could be an option for them. Hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
I appreciate the call, Sean. Miles would do anything for you guys. He's still got two more years left on his contract in New Jersey at a manageable number.
Well, he was a name that I brought up last year I thought would be interesting. He is a left shot, right? He broke, what, 20 goals two seasons ago? Not this year, but two seasons ago, I believe. He got
19
to 19.
17,
yeah.
18.
A lot of speed, physical. Like I said, left shot. He is a bigger guy. The book on him is that, you know, when he's engaged and he's ready to go, he's a force. He's a good player, but there's too many nights where he's not quite engaged as much as he should be. So when we've seen him play against the Bruins, he's played well. You know, whether that's playing against his hometown team or not, but that's you know, that's something where, you know, you look at it and you say, wow, you know, this guy can really play, and then the numbers don't necessarily translate all the time. But he did have 19 goals last year.
The other caveat to that is, so Ray Sherrill is no longer there in New Jersey. Right now, Tommy Fitzgerald, his assistant, is sort of taking care of the store. But what are the Devils looking to do at the deadline? Who are you dealing with? And what is their, what are you forecasting for what the organization wants to do going forward? They were obviously clearly really aggressive during the offseason. It didn't work out this season for a host of different reasons. But I think that that's something that every team will have to navigate if you're talking to the Devils about making a deal.
617-779-0985. We can take more of your calls coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers over at TD Garden this morning. And we're taking your calls at 617-779-0985. We'll go right back to the phones here. We got Paulie in the truck up next. Hey, Paulie.
Hey, what's up, boys? Good to talk to you again this morning. First, I want to say that I've been listening to your whole show. Okay, that I saw last night on the news, the that viral video of that woman being harassed by that man on the plane because she dared to recline her seat after giving him 10 minutes to eat. He asks to eat, then he breaks out his computer, and then he starts lightly tapping her seat. By the time he was through harassing her, he's actually banging on us, so her head's bouncing up and down off the back of the seat. That was reprehensible. I wanted to go through the screen, put my hands around that guy's throat,
right,
and bang his head up the back of his shit.
All right,
shit,
Paulie, what do you got on the Bruins?
The Bruins. All right. I think Lauzon has been signed, and they projected him the same type of body, character. He's a tough guy who dropped the gloves, protect his other mates, big, tough, strong defenseman to fill the shoes of Zdeno Chara when he retires, which I believe will probably be the end of the year. He's really starting to lose it. He's starting to fall into his old habits of not making good decisions with the puck. He was with a terrible puck handle, well, worst puck handling defenseman they had last year, until he finally straightened out by getting the puck, and he said skating, putting his head up, skating if he had open ice, or looking for an open man and getting rid of it quick, or getting it out of the zone. He was diddling around with it. He kept getting stripped. He was knocked down in the corner by a much smaller forward the other night. Guy didn't really hit him too hard. He knocked him right there. You could just tell he just gets getting too old, and he's starting to doubt himself when he gets the puck. He has the puck now. He's falling back to his old habits. Just gotta get it quick. He's got open ice. Move with it. Look for an open man. If not, somebody's coming on him. Look for an open man. You don't see the guy. Get it out of the zone.
All right.
He's becoming indecisive.
Thank you for the call, Paulie. just without getting into all of that, guys, I did want to ask you, Connor Clifton is on the verge of coming back, isn't going to play today, but is going to be back here shortly. We talked about the Lauzon contract extension. We talked a little bit about, you know, what the deadline might look like and who could potentially be on the move. When Clifton is ready to go, when he is cleared to go, what does the top six on this team look like? Does Lauzon wind up back in Providence? How do you think it shakes out?
Most likely. I would imagine that Clifton would slot back in over on the, you know, as the right side to play with Grizzlick, and then Moore would be your extra guy. That's, you know, assuming that there's no, you know, no deals done at the deadline, right? So how many days are we away right now?
Is it 9.
The 24th? So yeah. So that's gonna sort itself out here in the next week or so. But my guess would be, you know, that Lauzon has acquitted himself well. He's shown that he can play here. But Clifton on that right side, I think, is more of the situation that they would go with.
But keeping with the same...
You see how Clifton comes back from the injury as well.
And sure. That's one of the things that Bruce Cassidy touched on, was keeping with the theme that we've had here over the last couple of weeks, maybe a month or so, is that Bruce Cassidy mentioned yesterday at practice that Connor Clifton would have to earn his way back into the lineup. He'd have to earn that spot. So I think that he's still putting everybody on notice on the back end. It's about the way you play. It's about your productivity. It's about the minutes that you're giving on a night-in, night-out basis, or in this case, we got a day game, and that will ultimately ensure whether or not you've got a spot in the lineup.
Let's go to Frank the Tank up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. What's up, Frank?
What's going on, gentlemen? How you doing?
Good. Frankie.
Hey, what's up, Judd? Look, first off, before I get to Sweeney, I want to personally thank the Battle of Alberta. That has been some just excellent, excellent hatred and pure, clean violence. I love it. It's been awesome to watch, you know, catching the late games off the West Coast. I just love it. I'm so glad that those two teams despise one another again. I just wish every other division could get that 80s hockey back. It would be wonderful. And Zach Cassian, in my opinion, I mean, should have been suspended for a year for kicking somebody with a skate, the knucklehead. But look, I wanted to talk just about Don Sweeney. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and throw some numbers at you and tap things and who the Bruins should get or whatever. I think this year is going to tell us a lot about Don Sweeney. He was not my first choice to be the Bruins general manager. However, I do feel that he's done a lot of good things. He cleaned up Peter Chiarelli's mess, and he's made some really good, smart decisions with contracts, with players coming up from draft picks or from the minors. To me, gentlemen, and I'd like your opinion on his moves that are hopefully coming up. I think he's got to do something for the team this year. Your pathway was set last year, and you missed a glorious opportunity. I think this year, gentlemen, he's got to step up from being a player and be a king, and get this team, the right tools that they need. I know it's not easy, but I think this year he really has to make a move. I was wondering what you guys thought of that.
Yeah, he's in order to do it, he's going to have to get very creative. But he's shown, I mean, hey, went after Rick Nash a couple years ago, right? Yeah. Last year, bring in Johansson, who worked out very well. There was
Coyle worked out extremely well.
Yeah, Coyle, Johansson. You know, what did I say? Johansson on the right side and Coyle. So, and Johansson, you know, that line ended up working out well. Did they address that second line? Not quite as much as they wanted to. I mean, Kuhlman ended up slotting in there. Backus played a little bit at different times in the playoffs as well. So, you know, they tried to do some of that in the offseason with Richie coming in. It's unfortunately didn't work out either. But he's been very active at trade deadlines. So, you know, if that rings true, I mean, I think the Nash one was the biggest one, right? That was the biggest swing. Anyhow, I mean, you trade, you got part of the Bolesky contract to go. You got, you lost Lindgren, who's now a regular here with the New York Rangers playing on D, and you lost a first round pick. So, you know, you lost that year. And with Nash, if he had re-signed and if he had been healthy during the playoffs, you know, it might have been a different story. Unfortunately, he gets hurt and they go the other direction. So he has shown that he will be active at the deadline.
And just thinking about Marcus Johansson last year, that here was a guy, when they first got him, they put him alongside David Krejci. It didn't seem to work. Then he got hurt. He got hit by Michael Ferlin. But when he comes back, they ended up pairing up with Charlie Coyle, and that combination took off. So whomever you pick up, even though we envision who's going to play on the right side with David Krejci, is that right wing going to be a good fit? Or maybe it's a left wing, even though it sounds the Bruins would like to pick up a right shot. But I think the question remains, whatever piece that you pick up, could it work in multiple combinations depending on the way Bruce Cassidy wants to deploy his group?
Let's go to Chris in Worcester next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call. Love the show. Can you hear me okay? I'm in the worst Worcester zone ever.
No, we got you.
All right, thanks. Hey, listen, Bruce Cassidy was talking the other day about, you know, when on the pregame show, you know, bringing in new players, they discuss it and they talk about it. But he also discussed about internal competition, wanting players really to play for spots. So what about just doing nothing? What do you guys, you know, just don't stand back, you know, don't do a Nash deal. Don't. What do you guys think? Am I wrong?
All right. So, I mean, this is something that not too many people have raised. What about the possibility of, you know, essentially standing pat here for the Bruins and saying that this group, are they as composed? Are they good enough to make a cup run right now?
Well, they're pretty good right now. I mean, they really are. I mean, the number one team in the league right now. I know Tampa's breathing down their necks and Tampa's coming hard, but, you know, there's no guarantees whether you do anything or you do something that you're going to win in the first round.
Sure.
It just comes down to, you know, is the player you're adding, do you believe that that's going to be able to, you know, is that going to push you to where you need to be? Is that going to improve you enough? And even still, there's no guarantees that go along with it. I mean, there's teams around the league, you know, Winnipeg's a great example, right? They bring in Kevin Hayes and you know, and they get knocked out of the playoffs. They were poised for a deep run, and that was a massive trade, you know, with a first rounder going the other way. So, I've given that some consideration. I think that, you know, if you ask the players in the room and you poll them in the room and, you know, they're all going to say that, hey, we're happy with the group we have. But then if you get them maybe off the air and maybe, you know, you might get one or two that say, yeah, we're happy with what we have. You might get a couple that go the other way and say, no, we need to add something. So, you know, I think that there's an argument that can be made for it, but it all depends on the deal and the person you're bringing in and what it costs to get them.
I just feel like when you have a team that's in a position that they're in right now and, you know, they have, you know, points wise the best record in the league, you have to, if you're the general manager, put your team in the best possible position to try and win a cup. And that usually entails going out and making a move or two at the deadline to shore up whatever holes that your team has. And as good as this team is, there's still that, you know, especially that right wing, there's still that glaring hole that you've been trying to fill for years. I feel like if they don't take a swing at that again this year, I think a lot of people are going to be very upset that they didn't do everything that they could if they ultimately don't go on to win a Stanley Cup.
It seems like we seem to talk about this right around the trade deadline in the last couple of years. It doesn't always have to be the biggest name that makes the most important impact for mm-hmm. you. We've talked about Rich Peverly in the past. The Blues were a different scenario last year, but I don't remember a big trade deadline acquisition that they had that pushed them that far forward last year in the Stanley Cup playoffs. 2 years ago, the Washington Capitals added Michael Kempney. I don't think anybody, you know, I think there are very few people who knew Michael Kempney, who he was and where he came from. But he played some critical minutes for the Washington Capitals, and they win the Stanley Cup. So it doesn't always have to be the big name that makes the most impact or brings the most out of your lineup in order to win a Stanley Cup.
All right, we've got Judd Surratt, Bob Beers over at TD Garden, and we will be joined as well by Billy Jaffe coming up next. We'll talk about an eventful week around the league with him. Coming up next in the final half hour of this week's Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, back here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston holding it down here in the Town Fair Tire Studios over at TD Garden. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, and now we're going to welcome in Billy Jaffe of Nesson as well as he joins us each week at this time. Just real quickly before we get to Billy, just to kind of go off of what Judd said just before the break, the only move that the St. Louis Blues made around the deadline last year was to acquire Michael Delzato for a sixth-round draft pick. That was the only deal they made in the month of February. So, you know, to answer your question, is it possible to win a cup without a significant trade? I'd say yes, it is. Not that I'm advocating for that. Welcome in, Billy Jaffe. How are you?
I'm sure they could get Delzato again this year.
Probably could.
Yes. Just ask Bob Murray.
Right. What are they going to do out in Anaheim? Are they going to sell off? Kasha? Are they going to move? Are they going to entertain Rickard Rakell? I don't think so.
Can I have Josh Manson?
You can't. You can, but you won't. That'll be one player that they won't move. What are they going to do out there? I mean, the whole state of California hockey, what are they going to do? They're on life preservers, wearing them life right now as they are sinking into the Pacific.
Billy, are the Bruins as composed right now good enough to win a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I'd love to see him get I'm going to give you a lame-ass answer. Let's see what happens. Injuries, do they have depth if Clifton's healthy? And I guess your 8-9 is Kampfer, and, you know, you're using Lausanne and et cetera, and you've got nine guys deep on the back end. I think I've heard a lot of the show today, and I would agree with seemingly, I might say everybody, but I'm going to say a lot, that it would be nice to get another good forward into the mix. I think that seems to be, you know, the overriding belief or feel. But can they win it? Yeah, I think they could battle. Well, let's see how the war of attrition or the battle of attrition is.
Well, Ryan, in the big picture, I know we have talked about secondary scoring for the Bruins, but I think it's 5-on-5 scoring. So heading into today's action, so the Bruins are 6th overall in the NHL in goals per game. They are 14th in the league in goals 5-on-5. So if they can get a little push, and hopefully that can come from something up front, then that can make them a more dangerous team.
I heard earlier, Bob, you were talking about wanting to see more from number 10, from Bjork, and I'm with you 1,000%. And I love what I've seen.
10 and 43.
And 43. And one of them, right? Or both. Actually, yeah. I really like what I've seen out of Anders. However, it's the old eye test come playoff time. I mean, that is so gigantic. I've loved what I've seen out of 13, out of Charlie Coyle. You could argue that he's been their best forward since the break ended. That he has been outstanding in his not just puck possession, but actually bringing it to the net, doing things that make him, you know, playoff Charlie, what we saw last year. Now, can the rest of the guys do it, RJ, come playoff time? That's the big question. So that's where having another forward would seem nice, right? Would seem nice to add.
Well, one of the teams that we've talked about over the last few weeks about will they, won't they be active at the deadline and in what way is the Minnesota Wild, who yesterday fired Bruce Boudreau as the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Shockingly. Well, I mean, look, they clearly have felt like they've underachieved this year. They make Well,
I don't think so.
The Wild must feel that way, right?
Well, maybe Billy Guerin, you know, Billy Guerin's comments yesterday, as a paraphrase, where, you know, he wants to make the playoffs. I get it. They want to make the playoffs because they want to make some money, even just one round. I don't see them as a playoff team, especially with the way that Dubnyk hasn't played this year. No disrespect to Stalock. I just don't see him being the guy. He might lead him into a playoff race. I don't see him leading him into the playoffs totally. RJ, maybe they have. I don't see them as underachievers. I see it as a flawed lineup. I get what Billy G's trying to do there. I respect the heck out of it. You know, players don't want a player. They don't believe the same thing that they believe, you know, to make the playoffs, et cetera. Okay, then they don't want them there. I think that's fine. And I do – look, they could scrap and claw their way into the playoffs. What the heck's that going to do for them? It's going to get them to the malaise of mediocrity that they've been for how many years now? I mean, you know, it's they don't play stingy enough defense to be a defense first club. You know, they want to score some goals, but then they're not going to outscore you 6-5 on a daily basis. So maybe they look. Bruce Boudreau was not coming back after this year. He was not coming back.
How many GMs get hired for the first, you know, for a new team and don't make a coaching change?
1%.
I mean, this team here, Detroit. You know, they haven't done it.
No.
Eisenman took over. They haven't done it.
They haven't done it yet. And I think that Stevie Eisenman understood the situation that he was in, that Blaschel was in.
I'm saying most do. Most do.
Sure. I'd say 99% do, RJ. I would. So, I get what you're saying,
but the timing of it's odd.
Very odd. Consider.
They're only 3 points out of a playoff spot right now. I mean, if their aim is to make the playoffs, you know,
let's never forget that Lou Lamoriello fired a coach with 3 games left in the regular season.
They had over 100 points.
They had over 100 points. Let's never forget that.
Well, I also think that that's somewhat of an illusion because you've got some teams that are in front of them that they need to pass. The Nashville Predators are one of them, and they're starting to make their move. You've got Arizona, you got Calgary that are currently occupying some wild card spots.
Boy, are those two teams sloppy.
They are. Well, we're going to get our chance to see Calgary for the first time next week. It's the only team that the Bruins have not seen. So, I think Billy Guerin he's got some things that he's got to manage there in Minnesota. He's got an aging core. Mikko Koivu's coming to the end
I watched him the other night, man. Did he look slow?
He's 36. He's got a lot of hard miles on him. But Zach Parise's 35. Ryan Suter is 35. Those guys have some long-term
deals.
Still
have 5 years apiece on those guys.
Yes, yes. Those are no trades, for literally and figuratively, right there.
Well, and they have a strong connection to the owner and Craig Leopold, too.
So what does Billy Guerin do at the trade deadline? Because we've talked about a few players on that roster could potentially be on the move. He even, you know, he basically threatened to trade anybody who even thinks about, you know, quitting on the season this week. Do you expect that he's going to be a seller, or are they going all in just to try and make the playoffs?
I expect if somebody makes him a good offer, he's going to sell, and I expect him to hold on to just enough to stay in the race if they can. Now, you know, could somebody like I'm trying to think off the so-called normal sheet of player. I mean, I guess nobody's normal. You know, Jonas Brodin might be his best asset right now. He might be his best tradable asset on that roster because he carries a reasonable hit for a guy that can play 20 to 25 minutes. I don't know. Fellas, I got to be honest. I've watched him at times this year. I haven't watched Jonas Brodin in depth, but I'm told that he's been playing better lately. I'm told that he's been playing a more involved role. He's a beautiful skater. He's got a high level of like I said, of minutes, taking up minutes. He might be his most tradable asset. So does that happen now or later? And does he have to hold him because, you know, he needs defense? Yeah. Now, the other guy's Matt Dumba. I think a lot of guys are looking at, what does he sign for? Another few years? I think he's got $5 million.
Three more years at six.
$6 million, sorry. So, but again, those are going to be two big deals that RJ, my guess would happen off season more than in season, unless somebody says, we got to get that one D-man. Now, are there other players? a Marcus Foligno, for instance, a big guy, a fourth line guy, willing to scrap, doing things. You know, we saw an identity type guy go in Kyle Clifford to the Toronto Maple Leafs about a week and a half ago. You know, does that type of guy go to another team? I could see that happening. But again, Billy G's got, he knew this going in. He understands where he's at. He's now just starting to really be Billy G in the sense of, you know, Beersy, you know him well. Judd, you know, he's an intense, he's a passion, he's old school, and he's just starting to be Billy and saying, you know what, damn it, you guys don't want to play, fine. Get your butts out of here. And
sounded like that was the deal with Zucker. He had kind of had Zucker had, his, had enough. Had Zucker had been involved in trade rumors going back to last
summer.
Year. Yeah, that was the Kessel deal that Kessel ended up nixing. And so he's been involved in some rumors here recently, and he probably just had enough and said, yeah, maybe it's time to move me out. And the guy they bring back is Galchenyuk, who's it's an expiring contract.
Right.
And if, you know, he's still young, but he hasn't done much here the last few seasons. So, and they get a
first rounder
as well.
They get
a first rounder as well. Yeah,
and a prospect
who Billy knows from Pittsburgh.
Right, who I've heard good, great, and not sure about.
Yeah.
I've heard all three.
Yeah.
Is there anything less surprising than Jimmy Rutherford getting the trade deadline dealings going early?
No, never, not at all. Nobody should have been surprised at all. I mean, I wasn't. I was, you know. I mean, it's Jimmy Rutherford. He absolutely gets the most aggressive GM award. Kyle Dubas, I think, is trying to take that mantle now by getting what he has two early trade acquisitions under his belt, both with the LA Kings last year and this year. No, but Rutherford
is. No guarantee Toronto makes the playoffs right now.
Pardon me?
There's no guarantee Toronto's in the
playoffs. I don't disagree.
Right now. Yeah.
It's just like we talked about months ago at Arizona. I felt that they weren't guaranteed. Right.
And
what's up, Florida and Bobrovsky? He's had a good little run, and he sucked the other night again. Holy smokes, he got lit up for four or three in the first period. Holy smokes, they only have six more years at 10 a year, RJ, with that guy.
That's all.
You can't turn to Chris Drieger. He's hurt, right?
Right. He's got to play Montembleu.
He does.
He's got to play. Isn't that the Pen? Or Mont Blanc. Sorry.
It is.
Yes.
With the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, for Kyle Dubas, you mentioned the trade that he made, and he had to get a goaltender in order to try and salvage his season to hopefully try and push them into the playoffs. But they still have some needs they have to address. They have some serious injuries. They just recently lost Andreas Janssen.
For what, 8 weeks minimum?
Yes, you know, and now we're hearing, well, Morgan Riley's getting better. Maybe he's getting a little bit closer.
Can maybe put pressure on his foot next week.
but based on the salary cap and what they are currently carrying, the type of gymnastics that they have to be able to contort themselves into to acquire the pieces they need D. And if you look at their bottom six forwards, they need help there too.
Yeah, no question. No question.
All right, Billy, we get back to the trade stuff here in just a second, but I, you know, had a couple of tweets this morning asking about the Zach Cassian suspension. 7-game suspension for kicking Eric Cernak in the chest with a skate blade. Is this too light? I mean, that's a pretty dangerous thing that Cassian did, and it's his second suspension in less than a month.
Yeah. I thought they were only going to give him 6. They ended up giving him 7. Some people I know called for 10. I don't. When I say I thought they were going to give him 6, I just, you know, in the past we've seen 2-game suspensions and we've seen 20-game suspensions for kicking. I hate kicking. I hate it. I think it's one of the few hard that never should happen in our game. You know what? 10, I think, would have looked optically better. I don't know, Judd and Bob, you guys agree with that, but I'm always at a loss now on how they come up with the number in suspensions. I'm really at a loss.
I'm still baffled Jeremy Lauzon got a 2-game suspension. I am still baffled by that one. So when it comes to the decisions that George Parros and his group are making, I'm at a loss.
I mean, it's where I figure out an actual number, RJ. I just can't. I can't do it anymore.
What did Skinner get suspended for when he was in a kicking incident? I don't remember.
It was I don't remember.
He was the most recent one, I believe.
Wasn't he just a couple of games? Or,
but different guy in charge, different guy calling the shots. You know, in terms of that too.
Right, and then I mean, I was calling the game.
That was 2 games.
2 games, right? I was on the call when Chris Simon stepped on Jarkko Ruutu. And none of us could believe that. Literally, he chomped, stomped, you know, like he picked up and boom, and how thankfully didn't slice his leg open. That was 20, I believe, that Simon got.
Yeah, I think
he had a huge history.
Cassian was a history as well. So, and Skinner didn't. either.
No, Skinner, I don't think had any history.
Right. But Cassian has.
But Cassian has. Did they look, RJ, I don't know, rhetorically asking, at the amount of games left in the season? That shouldn't matter.
Right.
It shouldn't. 10 to me seems optically, well, it is stronger, and it looks better. But again, Bud, sorry to repeat, I can't figure out the number, and I can't figure out what's right or not.
So, by the way, the Bruins are going to miss Zach Cassian and Connor McDavid next week.
So is it really an Edmonton Oilers team? They're still.
It's Leon Draisaitl.
He's ripping it up.
He is ripping it up.
Leading the league in scoring.
Boy, I'll tell you, when his give a heck 12. Meter there is awesome. When he's on, he's awesome.
He's a good player.
When he doesn't, watch out.
Well, let me ask you about a former Edmonton Oiler in Taylor Hall. What's his future in the desert? Could he be on the move for the second time this year?
Yeah, he could be. He could be. I don't think they will move him, though, right now. I don't. But he could be because, I've never been a huge believer in this team. You know, you've got goaltending major issues there because Antti Raanta can't seem to stay healthy. Darcy Kuemper can't get healthy. Raanta, when he goes on a short run, I think he teases you with his health. And then you know there's going to be a game in warm-up where he just can't go eventually. I look at that team as constructed as I respect that what they're trying to do, play defensive, this, that, and everything. But when it's all said and done, it's a hard way to win. I don't see Taylor Hall without the bigger centers there. When I mean bigger, I don't mean physically. I mean more effective, being able to accomplish as much. It's not that you can't be a great winger. We've got two of them here in Boston that are phenomenal. But let's all admit, right, they're better with a guy like Bergeron or Krejci in between them because they help get the puck and they help support him. And I just don't see anything like that, nothing like that in the desert right now. So he could be on the move, but I don't think that would be good. Speaking of optics, I don't think that would be good for optics in the desert either. Maybe the offseason if they don't make the playoffs. But that's a whole analytically speaking thing as I talk about John Chayka out there.
Well, how about the optics of for Taylor Hall? I mean, this is a supremely talented guy who, you know, he hasn't played on great teams clearly, but he doesn't have a lot of playoff experience, and this could potentially be his fourth team in his career for a guy of that
right.
nature. I mean, that's it doesn't speak.
But if you're a good scout,
yeah,
if
ahead.
You're a good manager, I think you understand that he doesn't drive the bus. He might be the first passenger. You know what I mean? Like, passenger is the wrong term because that's a negative connotation. He might be the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, the second guy. And
he's
the co-pilot.
Riding shotgun.
Yeah, he's riding shotgun. But you get him, you know, the guy I think about an awful lot, and Judd, I saw him a ton too, is Marian Hossa. You know, I mean, different players. Don't get me wrong. They're not the same. Hossa, though, I felt became a winner when he learned certain things. Now, maybe that's just a result of the certain teams that Marian was lucky to get to. But he was a beast out there. But he would be your 1B. He wouldn't be your 1A. He wouldn't be 1A. I don't see Taylor Hall. Beers, do you agree? Judd, you agree as a 1A? I see him as a 1B. Maybe this is just the misfortune of being drafted by the Edmonton Oilers in the first place.
He got screwed. Who was his center in New Jersey when he won the MVP?
Was it Zajac?
I don't think you had that alpha there, though. You know what I mean? I don't think you had that guy there. Not to the.
They were a much better team. They were a much better team.
Better team, but you know, I'm saying that he was able to do it there.
And he
without having.
Well, he was also happy to get out of Edmonton. That year. He was also
motivated.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, so there you go.
Right, and didn't. And yeah.
I think Taylor Hall's played pretty well this year. I just don't think it's shown.
He's a point
of
game
Arizona.
Guy since he's been with Arizona.
I think he's a great player. I just don't think he's going to lead your team to a championship on his own. My take.
No, I get it. And he clearly, you know, he carried the New Jersey Devils in large part into the playoffs a couple of seasons ago. The Arizona people will tell you that he's been a good teammate.
Yeah.
He has played well for them, but they have some other team issues that they need to resolve.
That D in Jersey was much better a couple of years ago than it is right now.
Oh, definitely.
Hey, real quick before we wrap up, Billy, people have a chance to come watch a game with you tomorrow, right?
Yeah, watch, and we can listen. We're going to have everything going. Wormtown Brewery at Patriot Place, 3:30 to 5:30. The boys will be calling the game on the road, so we'll be watching it from Patriot Place, or the new Wormtown Brewery that opened up a couple of months ago.
There you go. Go have a few Mass Hole lagers with Billy and talk a little bees tomorrow afternoon.
Looking forward to it.
Judd and Bob and Billy will be watching and listening this afternoon. Thanks for all the time this morning.
Thanks, RJ.
Sounds good.
See ya. All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stick around for Gasper and Murray next.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.